Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, a little cold. Other than that, I'm fine.
Well, yes, we had a cold spurt this past week, and then this weekend they say is supposed to be nice. And this might be one of our last nice weekends for several months, because when we go into next week, we're going to get down to the 50s again and the 40s, and by Wednesday, I've heard even in the 30s.
That's going to be a little bit chilly again.
It
is. You know, the first of the week was really chilly everywhere.
Yeah.
And now you tell me it's going to go back to being really cold.
Yeah. We have nice weather in time for this weekend, so we'll enjoy that. But, yeah, once we get back to Monday, it's back to being cold and back to winter again.
Wow. I don't know if I can take it. I may just have to get by the fireplace and work from there.
Either that or go down to, like, the Bahamas.
Yeah, I could do that. I could work from there.
Yeah.
I can just send, correspondence from there.
Yeah, there you go. You work remotely.
I'll work remotely. You know, people are doing it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And, a country away, it wouldn't hurt.
No, you go down there for like 5 months or so. You can video conference with people, video chat, do everything by email. Phones still work and all that. Nobody will miss a thing. It's very normal. It'll be exciting.
Okay, I'll just pick an island.
Okay, I'll go with you.
Okay, we'll do all of our remotes from there while we sit on the sand. I can see this now.
We'll do your money with Faye Bagby from the beach.
That's right, and get the sand out of our sandals,
yeah.
And just, we won't have Mai Tais maybe, but we can have all the juice in them, you know. I can see it now. Yep.
That'd be a good problem to have.
Wouldn't that be the best problem in the world?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I watch that on television all the time. All these people go to these islands and leave Texas and move to them. And I haven't heard how it's worked for any of them. I haven't heard.
Yeah.
I'd sure like to know.
Whoa.
After a year, are they still there?
Yeah. You need to find out, because if it's not working well, it may change other people's plans.
That's right. But they all just, I've seen several from Texas, Colorado, in the north especially. They're tired of that cold weather, and they buy a house and spend their money in these foreign countries, and they plan to just start a business there. And you know that's going to be tough. Can you imagine starting a business in a foreign country?
No, I can't
either.
It's hard enough to start one here, but you go to foreign land and try to open up a business. I what kind of businesses do you know?
Well, it had to do with water,
huh.
Naturally, because there's so much water there. One of them was, I think the guy was going to have a boat charter.
Oh.
And I thought, well, my gosh, they've already got boat charters there.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know if they need any more.
I don't know if they need any more either. I just wasn't sure how that was going to work. But anyway, it's going to be interesting.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah, you need to find out how they're doing and report back to us.
I will look up some of those people that I saw that had moved to those foreign countries, and it's been a year now.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious.
Yeah, reach out to them, see what they're doing, if they're still there. And if they're not, then we know that that's probably going to come off our list.
It will have to come off. But now if they say it's just fabulous, it's wonderful, put it back on the bucket list.
Well, yeah. That becomes one of the top priorities then at that point, because they've been through it. They know.
But what I'm afraid of is, you know, those little huts or the house on the beach. You still got to deal with people of a different language.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. And those huts, I don't know what they're like in person, but they look like, you know, some of them are made like literally out of like straw. you just like punch your way through the wall and walk in the house. I don't know if that's real, but that's what it looks like on TV.
On TV, a lot of them that I looked at looked open on almost every side. They had the little wall you can pull down at night, and fasten it.
That doesn't seem like it would be very secure.
And it wasn't, and these are on little islands. You have to go by boat to get to them. You can't just drive your car there.
Huh.
And you know, and women have to give up shopping. You've got to give up everything.
Yeah. Just
and I don't know about that beach life. How long you could do it?
Yeah, I don't know. We've talked about that before, and just like I think we kind of decided that within 6 months or a year, you'd probably be bored off your mind.
That's right. I'll check on that, okay?
Yeah, yeah. See how they're doing.
See how that's working.
See if that's a viable thing. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
This is all about growing your wealth so that you can retire happy and wealthy and early. Do a lot of people go to foreign lands to live or just to stay or an extended stay when they retire? What do people need to, you know, get ready to do financially? What kinds of things?
Well, usually people go to South Texas or you know, Granbury or East Texas. Most of them do not go to a foreign land. I mean, you've got to be a brave, brave soul if you're going to pick up, say, okay, children, you're in college, goodbye, we will see you, you know, at the end of the semester, come and see us, you know, we're way down here, you know, in the Dominican Republic or somewhere, and, you know, we're living on this little island. I think the thing is people think it's so cheap, it'll be so much fun. But I think it'd be lonely as heck, you know, because you don't know anybody there. And then these people are going to Mexico, and heck, they're killing everybody they can find down there.
Yeah.
I would never go there.
I keep seeing things on TV, commercials, you know, for people to buy Belize. They're like, come buy Belize, move to the islands. And, you know, they have all these docks that go out into the water, and there's these little huts that are placed, you know, all along the docks. And they say, oh, come and live in these whatever they're called, and then it'll just be like paradise. And I keep seeing tons of commercials for that. I didn't know if anybody actually did that or not.
I know some people that went down and bought land. It's been 20 years now, a lawyer friend of mine from Houston. And he went down there and built things in Belize. But Belize now is very, very expensive. For an American to go and live in Belize now, it would cost them a lot of money.
Oh, really?
The homes are very expensive. You may be seeing little things on the beach, but the real homes are more than they are here.
Really?
It's very expensive to live in Belize.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's the one place I do know about. So when we talk about people retiring, most people are not that brave. I mean, I do not know one single Texan that has moved to a foreign country. As I said, I have a lot of them retiring this year, and they're moving like to lakes around Tyler. I've had a lot of people moving to Granbury, the Hill Country. But I haven't heard anybody say, you know, we're going to go and live like on the island of St. Thomas. St. Thomas is expensive also.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's an American island, it is very expensive to live there. Remember, everything's imported to those islands.
That's right.
You know? Anytime you need has to be brought in by boat.
Yeah, it's kind of like Hawaii. I know living in Hawaii is expensive because you have to import everything. Everything's got to be brought over.
That's right. And I do know people have moved to Hawaii. And they get jittery. Now, I do know this about Hawaii. People get jittery. They've been there. It's like, they said that it's like being filled, cooped up, because on each island you can only drive around so much. And then you're bored. I mean, you can play golf. You can swim in the ocean. But then what do? You can't get away from it. Like if you lived in Texas, as big as Texas is, you know, you could go to a different climate or a different place every day.
Yeah, that's true.
But there, you're confined to a very small area. So I don't have anybody wanting to move to Hawaii that I know of. Now, I know I have people that have vacation homes over there. They have condos over there.
Really?
Yes. And then the movie stars on Maui, they all have condos there. I know several movie stars. When we were there years ago, like Carol Burnett, she had a place there. And several other people have places there, and I have friends that go every year, and they rent a condo on Maui, like, for 30 days.
Huh.
Yeah.
I would imagine probably living on one of the islands would make you feel a little bit trapped, kind of like you say, you can only drive around so much, but you eventually get to the limit of how far you could go. I would imagine the walls might start to, you know, close in after a while, whereas if you stayed in Texas someplace, it's so wide open and you can drive anywhere. It's wide open space. You can see hundreds and thousands of miles, you know, with your own eyes. And so I would imagine that would be much more freeing than something like on Hawaii or Maui or any of those islands.
That's right. And I think lots of times people, you know, we can all dream, and dreaming is great, you know. But then, you know, you have to come back to reality. Is how long will I enjoy that, you know? And that's just like what we do for people. You know, a lot of people have been in the stock market all their life. But now, you know, as you get older, you come to your senses and say, you know, I might need to do some other things other than just the stock market. And the predictions are, you know, that it could get rough. And, you know, we may have a recession. I don't know. But I do know that if you're diversified, you know, if you have some money with us and you're doing life settlements, that's solid. That's not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And what I like about a life settlement is it's a life insurance policy. We're investing in people's life insurance policy that have, you know, cancer that are not going to make it. It's all stage 4 cancer. And I think that it just makes a world of difference. I have people call us every week. So I've been listening to you for a long time, and I'm ready to do something. I want to move some money over to you. And I always ask them, you know, what are your thoughts about retirement? What is your thoughts about making money? And they said, we think we need to be diversified. We don't feel comfortable with it all being at risk.
Well, yeah. I mean, if all your eggs are in one basket, you know, and something happens to that basket, you lose everything. I think a lot of people still remember what happened in 2008. And so I'm sure some people are still recovering. I'm sure some never did recover, you know, from 11 years ago. So as people are looking at what's going on now, and they're saying, you know, golly, you know, we might be staring down something similar. You know, like you say, the predictions are that there could be a recession. So when people come to see you for the first time like this, do they say, you know, gosh, Faye, I want to take everything out. I want to get all in life settlements. Or do they kind of want to, you know, test the waters a little bit, see, and then maybe move a little bit more and then a little bit more?
Lots of times people will bring maybe $200,000, $250,000. Mm-hmm. They'll start with that. But within a year, they'll bring another $50,000, another $100,000 usually. And then I have people that jump in and say, look, here's $400,000. After that, we'll see what we're going to do. Then I have people that say, okay, we're fixing to retire this year. Here's $1 million.
Okay, so they're a little bit more aggressive.
Everybody has a different thought about their retirement goal and how they're going to retire and what they're going to do in retirement.
When somebody comes over and sees you for the first time and they try this out, say they bring over $400,000 and say, Faye, here you go, here's $400,000, put it wherever you want to, or you know, whatever you think is best, or however the process works. Is all that invested at once, or will it kind of spread it out a little bit?
Usually they'll say, okay, how many policies will this get me? That's always their first question.
Okay.
And I always say, well, if we do 50,000, we can do 50,000 per policy, or I can do 90 or 100. And as you know, I like to do 80 or 90,000 per policy because of the return. You make more when you have more in a policy. So, you know, we just always tell them that I'll let them know on each policy how much I think they should put in.
Okay.
And the one we're doing right now, we're putting 80 and 90,000 in it, unless it's somebody that says this is the last of our money. We're just about up to our max. Whatever I've got in my account, just put it in that policy. And I'll do that lots of times too. If they say I don't have but 40,000 left, just throw it in there. We'll do that too.
Okay. All right, so it really kind of depends on the person, how aggressive they want to be, where they're starting, what their goals are. It's really unique for every investor, right? It's not just a cookie-cutter thing.
It's not a cookie-cutter. Everybody is diverse. I was just going over every client that we have this last week and how diverse they are and what they want, you know. Like some say, I'm not doing but 50,000 a policy. I've got some that say, 100's fine, no problem. We have a lot that'll do 100,000 per policy. And they've been with us a long time. And I think people that have been with us, you know, 4 years and up, they just kind of, whatever I think on that policy, they're going to go along with it. Because they've seen how it works, they've seen me work, and they know they're coming due all the time, and they've made good money. That's the other thing. You know, all of our clients have made money. Some of them have made enough to retire early. You know, I've had several with Pioneer that came to us. They've already retired. And early retirement for some of them has really been nice. They're traveling. They're doing things with the grandchildren, and they've got plenty of income.
When people come over to see you for the first time, do you find that over time they're less involved with, you know, the policies and going over them ahead of time? Do you find that they and I'm asking this because I want people to know, you know, going in, it's like, how much time am I going to have to invest in this? Is this going to take up a lot of, you know, hours, or is it just kind of like, you know?
No, it doesn't take up a lot of hours, because remember, once we invest in a life insurance policy, we don't have to do anything until the life insurance policy matures. When it matures, then the money comes first to the bank, then the bank puts it in your account. So there's not a lot to this. It's, you know, it's very passive investing. You're just waiting for it to mature and to do it again.
Okay. I know a lot of people
who are. That's what we're doing.
They're in the stock market, and a lot of people get up at night, and, you know, they check their account, you know, every day. They kind of see the status on things because they're worried because of, you know, the reality of the stock market. So this is one of those things you don't have to do anything. You're in, and then you just wait for the policy to mature. When it does, you'll send them an email, hey, this policy matured, this money is going to go into your account. And then when it does, you send them another email, it's in your account, and that's it, really?
Well, and the difference is this. When you're in the stock market, this morning it may be up 100 points, and by nighttime it may be down 50 points.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why everybody has to check before they go to bed. They have to check their stock, see where it is, and they've got to check it every day. And when they don't, they get a surprise sometimes. They find out they've lost quite a bit.
Yeah.
And everybody says, oh, well, it'll go back up. But remember, 08, how long it took to go up. It took 6 years for most people to retrieve their money and to get back where they were.
Yeah.
So with this, you don't have to worry about that. It's not going to go down. It's not going to change. When it matures, the insurance company will pay you 100% of what's owed. It's just that way. They don't ask you to discount it, and it can't go down in the middle of the policy. That's what I love about insurance policies. It's just a simple matter. We put people in it. When it matures, they get their money. And somebody asked me this week, well, where do the statements come? From the bank, not from us.
Hmm.
So that's another real good thing. Your money is always at the bank. It comes back to the bank. Every time we have a maturity, the bank holds the money. We don't. And the other good thing is when it matures, the bank collects it and puts it in your account. That's the best of all worlds.
So you're doing the deal, but as far as, you know, every day, you know, monitoring of the funds and making sure that they get to where they need to be, that's all on the bank, and because that's what they do. That's what they specialize in. And they're so huge, people can, I guess, rest in comfort knowing that they've got that kind of a security system in place.
They have, and it's not like other investments where that company holds your money. We don't hold your money. It's at the bank. And it's not in our account, never. And like we always tell people, we don't want any checks written to us. When you start investing with us, the checks have to be made out to Nevada Trust.
Okay.
Not to us. And then we tell the bank which policy you want to go in. And again, the bank pays the other people when we buy that policy. They act as trustee on everything we do.
So you know it's secure.
That's right. And that's how to make it secure. Have your bank like we do. And everybody always says, why do you use a bank in Nevada or one in Utah? Because it's specialized, and a lot of people won't do this because the amount of work is involved. It is a lot of paperwork for anybody. you know?
I don't.
So it's just one of those things.
I don't want to scare anybody, but we're coming up, you know, we're less than a year now from the election. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, talk, you know, like you mentioned, about possible recession. Who knows? But there is some buzz about that. And I know as we get closer to election time, things tend to generally get a little unstable because people aren't really sure. Their confidence kind of goes down a little bit. They're not really sure where things are going to go. So how do you feel things are going to go? Or what's the word on the street? What are you hearing over the next, say, 6 months or so as we get closer to election day next year as far as the stock market goes?
Well, everybody seems to have different opinions. A lot of people said, we're taking our money out just to be sure, to be safe. Then a lot of people said, we'll wait and see. And, you know, everybody has a different opinion as to what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anybody does. I know that if we become a communistic country, the stock market will plummet. I mean, worse than you and I ever heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to remain free. I mean, Monday is Veterans Day, and, you know, that's part of our freedom right there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they have fought to keep us free since the 1900s.
So when people look at this and they're trying to gauge what to do, you know, what direction do we go? Because we're talking about people's money. We're talking about their retirement. It's not just, you know, hey, what do I do with this random ham sandwich sitting here? We're talking about retirement. And if you do have to start over, like many people did after 2008, it takes a long time if you know, there are people who never recover. And so people are looking at this very, very seriously. And so they're trying to gauge, okay, what do we do in the next several months? So, and I know everybody's different, but do you think it's wise to maybe take either all of it out of the stock market or leave a little bit in and kind of you get the other part in life and settlements?
I would definitely take a part of it.
Okay.
I'd take a portion that I want to absolutely be safe, that's not going anywhere. And it's like a lot of other things you do in life. You take what you value the most, that you want it to be strictly safe, and that's what you bring over to us. Your play money, whatever you can afford to lose, leave it in there. Or like a lot of people, when they come to me, they say, well, you know, I've taken this much out of my 401k. It may be $500,000 with us. It may be $300,000, whatever it is. They want to be sure it's in a life insurance policy that they know when it matures you get paid. It's just that simple. You know, it's not going to have any ups and downs. It's not going to be reduced. And that's what they're looking for, is safety of the principal. That's more important than all the money in the world as far as profit. If your principal's safe, you're okay.
Now, I'm gonna ask you the million-dollar question here. I'm going to set this up. You knock it out of the park. Say
okay.
People come over to you, and I know you've got a bunch of investors who have been with you for a number of years.
Right.
And I know a number of them are not in the stock market. So say anybody that has an investment, you know, in the life settlement program, say they're in this and something happens on Wall Street. Say something goes really bad. The recession hits. Something, you know, the bottom falls out. What happens to all of the investors' investment in the life settlement program?
It's perfectly safe because it's in a life insurance policy. It's not on Wall Street. Remember that. This money is not on Wall Street. It's not in stocks. It's not in mutual funds. That's what makes it a safe investment, because it's in a life insurance policy, and the life insurance company's got more money than anybody in the world to pay their claims. And they have never failed to pay a claim,
okay.
Not in the history of our country. So if everything went to heck like it did in 08, their life insurance policies would just be sitting there just like they were. It's not affected by the stock market. It's not affected by all the talk on television. You know, it's not affected by all the things people say every day. Because, you know, this is a world where everything is on Twitter, it's on, you know, all those other things. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's not affected by those people talking, okay? I don't do all those social media deals. So all I know is they're there and people do it, and, you know, we're not affected by that.
Okay, because I know that a lot of people are looking for, you know, some kind of a safe haven, and I know a lot of people think, and I know the joke is that they always, you know, take the money out of the bank and put it under the mattress just to keep it safe, or dig a hole in the backyard and bury it, you know. So, but if you do that, or something similar, this is all metaphorically speaking here, but, you know, if people do things like that, they're not growing their money. So I think a lot of people, they hunker down, they do things that they think are super, super safe, but in the process, you know, to avoid losing their money. But in the process, they're not growing their money. So there is a way to keep your money safe, to still invest and still grow it, even if anything else happens and all their friends and neighbors and some other type of investment lose everything. They're still not only keeping it safe, but they're keeping it growing with a life settlement, right? That's accurate, exactly right.
Okay. And you know, people can invest in ranch. I have several people who've retired, and they put some of that retirement money in a ranch. Now, I don't know that that ranch will ever make a dime, because it's hard in West Texas to own a ranch, because, you know, we've got a lot of mesquites, a lot of cactus, and you can't put very many cows per acre. But now, if they have some oil wells hit, they're going to be okay, you know, on those old ranches. And men love ranches. There's just something about it, okay? But I have some clients that have a lot of money with me. They also have a ranch to play on, you know, to go and spend a weekend. They'll go down there and maybe spend a month. And I know several years ago, we were having droughts like we do in West Texas. They had to sell off their herds. And that's your income. So a lot of things, you know, can cause you to lose money, like cattle ranching sometimes can.
Yeah.
But this is different than that. We don't have to feed them. You know, we don't have to make sure they have water. We don't have to take them to market. This is different than any of these other investments.
I'm going to ask you something. I don't know if we've covered it a whole lot recently, but what about the West Texas oil situation? Because I know, and this is the great thing about talking to you, is because you are in Texas. You're not in some far off, you know, you're not in Chicago or New York or L.A. or some other place. You actually are here in Texas, and so you know what's going on firsthand. You have the expertise, you have the knowledge, and so as you look at this, you know, with all the layoffs that are going on, I'm hearing, you know, people saying that, you know, a lot of apartments are starting to you know, be left because people are being left off, laid off, and they're leaving town, and so there's a lot of vacant apartments all of a sudden. A lot of people have their house on the market, and whereas several months ago they were selling, you know, overnight, now they're going on the market and they're just sitting there. They're not selling. So I'm hearing that the oil industry and the layoffs that are going along with it are affecting a lot of other things. How does something like that affect people's retirement and investments and things?
Well, it doesn't affect ours at all, the ones that have money with us. The ones it's going to affect is the ones that are going to say, okay, we're laying you off, and so then they have to decide what to do with their money. You know, they've got a good 401k, but they're not going to get to keep it there. They're going to have to move it to us or someone else. And they are laying off a lot of people. They're going to try to do it cheaper. They're going to try to do it with less people. I don't know how that's going to work. And, of course, you know, I didn't realize how much a drilling rig had changed. They're $25 million.
Wow.
Yes, and they didn't used to cost that kind of money. The other thing we've got that's affecting us is two or three big Canadian oil companies have come to West Texas. They couldn't make it in Canada. Canada drilling is way down. So they said, you know, we're going to move rigs to West Texas, and we're moving men to West Texas. So we're going to have a glut, you know, because these Canadians are coming down.
I hadn't heard that. That's new.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
We've got about three big Canadian oil companies that said, you know, we're not drilling enough. We don't have enough production going. We're going to move our rigs over across the border and first into the U.S. Now they're coming to Texas.
Hmm.
And so I don't know how that's going to affect us with all these extra people from Canada.
So what about the person who says, golly, Faye, you know, I've got some money. I'm ready to go. I'd really like to do this. But I know that the life settlement investment is not liquid. I can't access it if something were to happen, and I'm not sure if I'm going to have a job in 3 months or 6 months. And so getting involved in something like this, getting my money tied up in this investment, I'm not sure if this is a good deal or not because it's really unstable. I don't know if I'm going to have a job. What would you advise somebody in that general type of situation?
Well, what I would advise is if you don't know what's going to happen, you know, move some money over with us because it could be affected. You know, if they get laid off, they're going to have to take their money out anyway, you know. So, you know, if you want it to be safe and no downturn on it, you know, put it some of it with us or put it all with us. It depends on what your feelings are. When people come to us, they usually, you know, sort of know how they want to invest and what they want to do. And like you say, they are taking a lot of early retirements right now. I've had some people that just came to me that took the early retirement package because they didn't want to be laid off, and they were 60 years old, and those are the first ones that are going to be laid off, the 60 and 65s. Mm-hmm. They'll lay them off first because they're paying them more. And they want to quit paying into their retirement also. So those people are coming to us now, and they've heard us on the radio a long time. You know, these are procrastinators, so now they're coming over and talking to me.
So people are taking the buyout, they're taking the early retirement, and then I guess, and it's kind of a strange, you know, scenario to play out, but people can either take that buyout and not really do anything, or they can take that buyout, put some with you, and then get that money growing fairly quickly. I mean, if people don't do anything with it, then it's not really doing anything. Like we always say, if you're not making money, you're losing money. So they could take the buyout, come over to you, and get it growing.
I had a man come this week that said, his CPA said, you've got too much cash in your account.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, a lot of people are holding cash right now. And like a banker will tell you, I mean, anybody, if it's just in cash, it isn't making a dime.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to help you any. 0.25 or 0.90, you know, 1% isn't enough to do anything. And most of the accounts are not paying hardly anything. So if you're sitting there with a bucket load of cash, you need to get invested, make some money, do it conservatively. You know, don't be reckless with it. And you know, and guard your principal. Your principal is everything. If you can keep your principal and invest it, you'll be okay.
So it's virtually like people actually, like literally, taking their cash and throwing it under the mattress just to hold on to it and keep it safe.
That's right. And they're worried enough. They're just sitting there with cash. And a lot of people, you know, have seen the ups and downs of the stock market. They've seen how it can go crazy. And then, of course, the oil market. You know, it's about $62. And so people, you know, are not sure what to do. And, of course, a lot of them, like you say, they're in every aspect of the oil field out here. But we've got a lot of people that own their own businesses. Now, these people that own their own businesses, they deal with the oil and gas, but they're not direct in it. And this helps a lot right now. We've got several people who just come to us that own their own companies. And they're wanting to get diversified. They were in some brokerage accounts. They're not making any money. That's why they're putting it with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So let's move that needle just a little bit more. We know people don't want to lose their money, and so they're hanging on to it. So instead of just maintaining and just, you know, keeping status quo and just as long as we don't lose anything, we're fine, you can actually take that and push it even further, and instead of not only not losing anything and staying where you are, you can actually take that and grow it relatively safely without people having to worry about if something else does happen, if the stock market crashes, if I lose my job, if, you know, whatever the case may be, there's a lot of possibilities, but any one of those won't affect the investment, and that might be a good way for people to kind of see some light at the end of the tunnel.
I think so, because if it's not affected by war, it's not affected by politics, it's not affected by Wall Street, the things that go on in New York City, you know, and there's a lot of stuff that affects the market right there, you know, and world events will not affect a life insurance policy.
So I'm going to ask the obvious question, just so that you have a chance to spell it out really, really clear. Why is the life settlement so safe? Why is it not affected by all these other things?
Because it's not in the stock market. Now, if it was a stock or a mutual fund, it would be affected every day by the stock market, by outside interest, war, talk of war, European things, everything would affect it. But nothing affects this because it's just a contract. This is a contract between you and the life insurance company. It's a contract that says we've insured your life, and when you pass away, we'll pay. That's all it is. It's just a contract between you and the life insurance company.
So to oversimplify this, you cannot, as any person, cannot go buy a life insurance policy, say, for $1 million. And then when you pass away, they can't say, you know, we don't feel like it. We're going to pay, or maybe something happened and, you know, we don't have it. So we're only going to pay, say, 75% of that policy.
No,
that's never going to happen.
It's
not
never happened and won't ever happen.
Okay.
They have to put up reserves. Every time they write a life insurance policy, they have to put up reserves to cover it. So they always have the money to cover anything that happens on a life insurance policy. And it's different than a bank. A bank doesn't have to do that. They don't have to put up these huge, huge reserves. Life insurance companies are required by law to put up money on every policy that they write.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
So that's what keeps it secure. So people know, hey, this is not just, you know, we're saying we think. No, this is actual fact. This is how the whole process works, and that's why their money is safe. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
Every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring exciting, fun things to talk about. So what is the topic this morning?
Well, this morning we're going to talk about Veterans Day.
On Monday.
Monday is Veterans Day. Do you remember the story of why we celebrate Veterans Day?
I'm pretty sure we talked about it last year, and I'm pretty sure it was something that amazed me because I there were things in here that I didn't know, but I don't remember the specifics.
Okay, Armistice Day is what it was really called, and it was called Remembrance Day. It was the end of World War One, and it ended on the 11th hour, the 11th day, and the 11th month of 1918.
Hmm.
And it was Armistice with Germany, and that's why every year we celebrate it on the 11th hour, the 11th day, and the 11th month. And as you know, when it was just Armistice Day, you know, for a long, long time, not until Dwight Eisenhower was it made a federal holiday. Now, back in 1919 and 20s and all this, Woodrow Wilson, all these, they gave him a message on Armistice Day. That's just the way it was. They expressed, you know, their condolences. That's about all it was. And then as time went on, you know, it changed, and everybody wanted, you know, to make it a permanent holiday in remembrance of all veterans. And in 1945, World War II veteran Raymond Weeks, he was from Birmingham, Alabama, he had the idea to expand Armistice Day to, as I said, to celebrate all veterans. And not just those that died in World War One, but every war we've had. And General Dwight Eisenhower, he supported it, of having a National Veterans Day. And Weeks was the first national, he had the first national celebration in 47. And that was just in Alabama. And he was, when Reagan was president, he honored him there at the White House. And they had citizenship medal. That was in 1982. That's when the citizenship medals became a part of our country. And Elizabeth Dole, who prepared the briefing, determined Weeks as the father of Veterans Day. He's the one who got it done.
Wow.
Yes, this guy from Alabama is one who actually got it as a federal holiday. Everybody else just wanted to say thank you and all this. And then Representative Ed Reese, he was from Emporia, Kansas, he presented a bill establishing the holiday through Congress. And, of course, Dwight Eisenhower, you know, was from Kansas also. He signed the bill into law on May 26, 1954.
Wow, 54?
1954 is when it finally became Veterans Day.
Man, that took a long time to morph into that.
Took a long, long time. And it's just amazing. Then, you know, up there in Washington, you know, they're always messing with everything. And then they got the date moved two or three times. In 72, 74, October 25th. And then finally, it got it moved back to November the 11th, where it should be. And it's been that way ever since.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they had moved it so much so recently. I would have thought all of that would have been done, you know, in the 30s or 40s maybe. I didn't realize, you know, it was that recently that they were still moving it around.
No, 71, 72, 73, these people were crazy. In 1978, it was finally moved back to its original date of November the 11th.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. And, you know, of course, it is a federal holiday, on you know, for all veterans, not just veterans, you know, of World War One and World War Two, and but it took a long time to get there. That's what's amazing to me. And this guy, you know, Weeks, he was celebrated as starting it because for 8 years he was, you know, trying to get it to happen. He was trying to get it to be a federal holiday where it was celebrated all the way across the nation, rather than just a few places.
Wow. I'm surprised there it wasn't one of those things that was suggested and everybody was on board right from the beginning. It seems weird that it would have had to, you know, one, take so long, and two, get changed, you know, around so many times. But I guess that's how the process works, is you get an idea and then you kind of morph it and then you change it and all that.
Yeah, they were just doing proclamations.
Yeah.
Back in 26, you know. And in 1938, they were celebrating Armistice Day. It wasn't even Veterans Day.
And you say it started out just as remembrances, right?
Yes, just as Remembrance Day. It was not a veterans holiday.
Okay, because I know there's a difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day. Memorial Day is the day that, you know, we honor those who have fallen. Veterans Day is for all service people, fallen, the ones that are still serving, veterans, you know, past generations. It's everybody in the military.
And what I always like is it said everybody who has served honorably. Mm. It doesn't matter if you were a buck private or a general.
Yeah.
Everybody who served, this is in honor of them.
Hmm.
No matter where you were in the chain.
Yeah.
If you served honorably, you know, it's to commemorate the thankfulness of a brave nation for what they've done. You know,
yeah,
for a grateful nation for these people going off to war where we could be free here at home.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's...
And there's just no telling how many thousands and thousands we've had serve in the military.
Oh, there's so many, there's generations upon generations, you know, and a lot of times, you know, it runs through, you know, a family, you know, so if, you know, one person serves, odds are they're, one of their parents served, and then one of their parents served, and one of their parents served. It seems to be, you know, like a linear thing inside families.
It does, and I remember the stories of World War II where everybody would say, well, if this brother went, the other brother went. Mm-hmm. And the brothers may even joined up together back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, and nowadays we hear about maybe the father and the grandfather and then the sons, you know, becoming officers, which is really neat.
Yeah. Veterans Day is definitely a day of pride and honor and really celebration and thanks.
It is. And, of course, you know, I love all the Navy songs, the Army songs, the Marine battle hymn. And what I love is when you go to church, you know, when they are having the celebration, they bring all the flags to the front, and they have somebody from every generation
yeah
there. You know, they'll have somebody, maybe not now, but in the past, we always had somebody from World War II, you know, Vietnam, Korean War, every one of them. And it made everybody so proud to see these people, you know, and remembering, you know, what they've done for us.
Yeah.
And they looked so smart in their uniform and standing at attention.
I know a few months ago, I remember this, that there was, you know, the celebration of the storming of the beaches of Normandy. And they had, you know, all the ceremonies and the you know, commemorative events and things like that. And to see all those people that served at that time, it just... You couldn't help but watch it on TV or you know, see something on the internet where these people kind of got together and they, you know, had reunions, you know, back where they, you know, where they actually fought and things like that. And it brings back a nostalgia and a pride that that really talks about what America was founded on and on all the generations who have fought to get us to where we still are today. I mean, there's something very powerful in days like Veterans Day.
And they have the parades everywhere, you know, thanking them, having them walking in the parades with their families, which is really, really neat.
Yeah,
it is. I'm always so proud to see them with their families and marching down the streets and as we honor them. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, it really is. It's something that we should never, ever, ever forget. So.
No, and we should honor them every day.
We should.
Because we're so thankful for what they've done. You know, you and I didn't go. I mean, I didn't. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a miracle that these people all went. And, you know, it's hard work. It's not an easy job.
No. And to put yourself on the line, you know, it's one thing for somebody to know or that they're putting themselves in harm's danger. It's another thing when it actually happens. We have so many service people who, you know, who have had, you know, who are missing limbs and have, you know, physical damage and physical pain based on what they've done. And to knowingly put yourself in that position is really, it takes a bravery that is cut from a very special cloth.
And, you know, they've interviewed a lot of these men who have lost limbs. And all of them said they would do it again.
Yep, every one of them.
Now that's bravery.
It is. It absolutely is. It's taking a pride in our country and freedom and really doing something for a greater cause, much more than an individual person. We all go about our daily lives and it's like, yeah, I would like this promotion and I want to, you know, get a raise for this and I want to do that. But you know, when you serve in the military, you're serving a greater cause. There's no I in this kind of service, and so it's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different kind of service and an advancement and a pride that most of us don't experience every day.
That's right, and you know, on Veterans Day, they all wear their uniforms, and they wear them so proudly.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I'm always so impressed, and with the flags flying, I mean, it's really a wonderful sight.
It really is. So hopefully, people will take a few minutes out on Monday to actually remember what Veterans Day is. I know some people have the day off, a lot of people don't, but even if they're, you know, going to work, hopefully they'll take a few minutes. To just you know, say thank you to somebody who may have served, or you know, do something to honor our military. Veterans Day is a very special day.
It's a very, very special day, and we thank all of our military.
Absolutely. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
With a life settlement, we've been talking about, you know, a lot of the highlights and a lot of the wonderful things that make this investment such a good thing, especially, you know, over the next several months as we go into what may be a little uncertain time when it comes to Wall Street and stock market and things like that. So there are three risks that people need to know about when they go into this. Although when you lay these out, when people relate them to risks and worries and things that they face in on a Wall Street type investment, I think they're going to find a totally different mindset. So what is the greatest risk of a life settlement?
The greatest risk is it can go over. In other words, if it shows it's 24 months, it may not be 24. We may have missed it. Sometimes that happens. The doctors may have missed it, and it may go over. So you have to be aware of that. You have to know that if it goes over, you have to pay premium. Most of the premium is very small, but you have to know that. But that's the biggest risk. The second risk is it's not liquid during that time. So it can't be 100% of your money. You have to have emergency money. And all of our clients do, of course, because they're all accredited, or almost all accredited. And then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. And thank goodness we've never had one in Texas, and any one of them has ever gotten in trouble. I think there's one in the last 5 years, and someone bought it. You know, I mean, they buy them as quickly as possible because of the premium income. When you've got millions and millions in premium income, anybody in town would buy it, and they'd buy it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So that is your three risks. There is risk to everything in life. Nothing is 100%.
We've been throwing out some numbers, you know, as far as, you know, getting involved. You know, we throw out an example of, you know, somebody coming in and saying, I got $400,000 I want to put in. I've got, you know, $1 million I want to put in. I've got $100,000 I want to put in. To be involved in the program, you do have to be accredited. And so what exactly does that mean?
Okay, to be accredited, you have to make either $200,000 a year or you have to be worth $1 million without your home. And that can be, you can have horses, you can have cattle, you can have ranches, you can have rental income, a rental property, a 401k, an IRA, all kinds of things. A savings counts. Everything counts except your personal residence. And or you can make $200,000 a year.
Okay.
So it's either one.
So for somebody who's not accredited, they want to do the responsible thing. They want to start growing. They understand they do have to plan for retirement, but maybe they're not quite to the point where they're accredited. What would you recommend somebody like that to do?
I would recommend a fixed annuity, not a variable annuity, not one that's in the stock market or that's got mutual funds in, because it can go down and you can lose money. But if you buy a fixed annuity, they guarantee your principal from the day you put it in till you take it out. And there's all kinds of good things nowadays in annuities. The only thing is make sure it's an A-rated company, okay?
All right.
If it's a B-rated company, there's a reason for it. So if it's A or double A, it's perfectly fine. The ones we use are A-rated and double A-rated. Been in business 100 years.
Wow.
And worth $60 million minimum.
Whew, so the bar is pretty high.
$60 billion.
With a B.
With a B. Not an M, but a B. $60 billion.
So how does this life settlement work to plan for retirement? I know, you know, we've talked about the how great the investment is, but people shouldn't come in and say, okay, I want to do one investment. I'm going to give you $500,000, and then when it matures, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to retire. That's not how the plan works.
No. You have to be diversified. You have to have a lot of policies. You need 6, 8, or 10 policies to make it work. If you have just one policy, we don't want to sit here and wait 2 years for just one policy. We want to have several policies that we're waiting on to mature. And as they mature, we redo it again and again, especially when it's an IRA.
So the million-dollar question here again is, how much can I make? Because I'm sure people come to you and say, Fay, what's the earning potential with a life settlement? What do you tell somebody?
Well, I can tell them what we've made in the past. I can have them go look at the website. It shows everything everybody's made for the last 2.5 years. So, you know, we just put the initials on it and show them what people made. And that's the closest we can do it.
Right.
You know, just look at what we've made and what the clients have made, and that's it.
So how long should somebody plan on doing a life settlement in order to, on average, in order to be ready for retirement? Is this like a 20-year process?
I'd think 7 or 8 years minimum.
Okay.
And then if they want to leave it in and keep making money, they can do that. You can retire and keep making money. That's not a problem.
So somebody in their mid-50s, it's not too late to get started.
It's just right. If you're in your mid-50s, you've got 10, 15 years. So you can make a lot of money in 10 or 15 years.
You know? Do people, is there anything about retirement planning? Because I know it can be a little bit overwhelming. I know a lot of people look at retirement as though they're staring up at Mount Everest, but you start to break it down a little bit. You know, people obviously need money to travel. They need money in case of emergencies. Do people not necessarily know what they need to plan for? Or do most people have a pretty good idea that, you know, things could pop up? We need to travel. We need to, you know, whatever they need to do. Do people have an idea, or do you have to kind of steer them in that direction?
Well, lots of times they think they know, but they may not know, you know. And like we tell them, we pay 1% a month on your policies. That's what you're going to get paid. We're going to pay 1% a month. If it comes in early, it's still 1% a month for the policy. In other words, if it's 24 months, you're still going to make 24%. If it's 5 months, it'll still be the same, 24. It doesn't matter if it comes in late, early, or on time. If it's a 24-month policy, you'll get 24%. You make 1% a month for the life of the contract, whatever the contract calls for. If it's an 18-month contract, you'll make 18%. So you're going to make that regardless.
Okay.
And that's what makes it good.
Before we wrap things up, just real quick, expand on this a little bit, just so that people know that, because I'm sure somebody will say, well, golly, if I invest in a life insurance policy, how do I know it's not going to be, you know, 55 years before it matures? That goes back to because you're buying policies only of people who have stage 4 cancer, right?
That's right. Well, they've already been given that it's stage 4 and how bad it is. And then it's just a matter of time. Everything we do is a matter of timing.
Yeah.
You know, we had one that came in 4 months. Then we had one that was 2 years late. So, you know, it can happen. It can be a year late, it can be right on time, or it can be early.
Okay. All right. And that's why we know that these policies are going to mature in a fairly quick amount of time, relatively speaking. So, Faye, do you have appointments for people to come see you and get some more information this coming week?
That's right. I will be in the office.
All right. And one last time, what is your phone number so people can call and make an appointment?
Okay. It's 877-588-3330. It's 877-588-3330.